Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering subjects that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Bullying. For more information and stuff we talk about on the show, come to our website at www.geeksan.com.
Welcome, everybody!
Hello, my geeklings!
You will notice, due to the intro, that we are sans Aaron Hendricks for this episode.
Luckily, we have our geek pinch hitter, the fifth geek.
Miss
Lisa Lasek! Yay!
Is she like the fifth element? Does that make Lisa Love?
It does love. Make Lisa Love.
I actually have a doctor.
Lisa little, Love, her outfit. New nickname. Lisa Love.
Yes, I would pay you to wear the outfit.
Like, I need some ace bandages, and then I'm
you would actually have to dress as an anime
right
heroine
there,
with that.
Grab
name.
Them.
That would be some hot.
We'll take some.
We have we have total ace.
Actually, Matt has that outfit.
I think I do. Yeah, and an orange wig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't ask.
I have that. Dare I ask?
I got it for Halloween. It was just my thing.
That's the story you're sticking with.
Is Halloween in April? I was wondering about
that. That's my story. I'm sticking by it.
Okay. Fair enough.
It works.
Fair enough. So
Halloween is whenever you want it to be.
I believe that all of us should carry a little bit of Halloween around in our heart all year round.
Yes.
You know, it's
absolutely
important.
And candy. Oh, sorry. That's just me.
That's just you?
Yeah.
I never need to carry candy around. I mean, I always find there's a nice stranger on the street somewhere with a nice van that's got some candy for me. You know,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's one of the pluses of living in L.A.
So why don't we do a little geek roundup about what's been happening recently?
Yeah, exactly.
All sorts of stuff has happened.
So everybody knows that we've been in absentia, shall we say.
We had a bit of a slowdown.
And this is why, if you really want to know. One, I had a kid, and basically I've been in kid land. So I've been the lucky geek because that has been sort of my craziness.
Well, lucky and not just having a kid, but working your tail off on so many different projects.
I've been Mr. Working, so thank goodness, fingers crossed, let's keep it going.
Got something else you can plug right now for upcoming stuff? Okay,
but
that's not saying there isn't stuff coming up.
No,
I
that
know
is not
there's
to say
stuff
that there
coming
isn't.
Up.
There is something coming. It's big. It's great. I actually worked with Jerry O'Connell yesterday on it, and I get to work with, oh God, his name just went out of my head, Rorschach.
I love him.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Cool. And he's playing an evil dude in the thing that I'm working on. But
as soon as the NDA is lifted,
yes.
Then Matt will share, and we'll give another little plug on here.
Yeah.
But Matt is not the only one with an upcoming TV appearance, if I understand correctly.
Okay,
Mr. Peter.
Let's talk a little bit about what's been happening with me.
Okay.
We should do a quick introduction. That was Matt King.
Hi, I'm Matt. I am an actor here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
Hi, my name's Peter. I'm a screenwriter here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
Hi, my name is Don. I am a video game professional and writer here in sunny Hollywood, and I, too, am a geek.
Hi, I'm Lisa. I'm a film editor in L.A., and I am a gigantic geek.
And a producer.
Oh, well, okay, sometime producer.
So Peter.
For those who don't
I'm
know.
So curious.
Basically, my wife and I are having twins. This is big news.
Yes,
I knew
exactly.
Pregnant. I didn't know twins.
Twins.
Oh my gosh. Twins.
We're having Peter's two. An overachiever.
We are.
Oh
we
my
we are.
That's crazy.
As of this Monday, it will be at 16 weeks.
Wow.
So, Tracy, you should see Tracy.
Yes.
Oh my God.
She's
I have
cute.
To
she's
see.
She's cute as a button.
She's adorable.
Aww.
Yeah.
And the boobs are getting bigger. She looks like a busty tavern wench, you know.
In the best way possible.
In the best way possible.
In the Tika Whalen way possible.
That is huge news.
It is huge news.
I can't believe it.
You can't segue from we're talking about our boobs to saying that's huge news.
Oh, sorry. I'm still stuck on the twins. Other twins.
Anyway, she looks really cute.
Yes.
And she's been having pretty bad nausea, actually, because the trouble.
Double the hormones.
But it's actually starting to settle out now.
Oh, good.
Yeah, now she gets to be happy for a little while and just glow.
There's still a little nausea and some stuff that happens. She, you know, gets tired every once in a while. So it's cool. It's really exciting.
Yeah. Wow.
And so...
That's why Peter's been in absentia. He's been busy.
Yes. And then the other day, we were actually on Dr. Phil because we're having twins.
Oh, wow.
And kind of the take of the episode was women who are prepared and their loser husbands who are not.
No.
Yes. So, yeah, so I felt a little bit under the gun there.
Did you know that going into it?
I kind of had a sense that that's where they were headed. You know, we kind of had a sense that that's where they were headed.
But you didn't know, you just sort of suspected. I mean, you're going on to a talk show.
We had a pretty good idea that's where it was headed, you know. You knew just from, you know, the questions and the things that they were doing and, you know.
It wasn't quite their loser husbands. They weren't that mean.
They weren't that mean, but it was kind of, you know, it was a cute little thing, and
they were saying the wives were more prepared and the husbands were less prepared.
Right.
Well, look, you know, the whole gist of it is that, you know, Tracy pulls out, she goes, I've read these 20 books, you know, I'm like, and I haven't read any.
Oh, no.
And then there's like, you know, and then they'll ask me a question, you know, how much is this all going to cost? And I'm like, I don't know how much it's all going to cost at the end of the day. I really have no clue, you know? And then they'll ask Tracy, how much do specific things cost? And she'll go, oh, well, the stroller. They didn't ask me how much do specific. Uh-huh. And she'll go, well, the stroller costs this and this costs this. So, you know, it kind of comes across like, you know, like I'm sitting here going, you know, da-di-da-di-da-di-da. You know, well, this is
pretty thing.
I'm sorry, my butt was itchy. What's going on?
Right. And look, I'm not going to say, again, you know, there's certainly some truth to this because I haven't read any books yet. You know, but I'm also in the middle of my teaching for another couple of weeks. And when I'm done with that, I have nothing to do but prepare for the baby.
Exactly.
And you have time to prepare.
We're 15 weeks. 15 weeks.
Oh, that's all? 15 weeks?
Yeah. Yeah, we're only at 15 weeks. Come on.
But
it was actually a super cute episode. Dr. Phil was revealing his new grandchild. And it turned out that his son's and stepdaughter's doctor is the same doctor that we have. And so they did this whole thing showing the delivery, and it was like really oddly intimate and eerie because it's like, oh my God, we're watching a delivery with our doctor. You know, it's like, it sort of felt like that's what was going to be, it was going to be like for us.
So behold the future.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, yeah. So Tracy and I are like, oh my God. So that's my news.
Wow.
Did they actually project it on the back of Dr. Phil's head so it was sort of like a crystal ball?
Yes, in fact, that's exactly what they did.
See, everybody so, listens to me.
Figure in another year or so, we probably will be doing an episode on how to fit more geek time into your busy fathering lifestyle.
Yeah, that's probably
so.
Accurate,
just so we're gonna have a lot more perspective on that in the
midnight
near
to 3 a.m. That's
be the perfect time for role playing.
Exactly.
Your hands are gonna be full. That's so exciting.
Are you kidding me? It's gonna be you. Listen, it's going to be really intense. There's going to be some episodes where you hear some crying babies. I'm just warning everybody right now.
All right, Donnie.
So
segue?
Yeah, on the flip side of that, I was continuing my big weight loss program. Some of you have been following that on with my Facebook stuff and all that sort of fun thing. So late last year, I had just crossed the 200-pound lost mark, I think.
Wow.
Total. When I found I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. So that slowed me down a little bit.
Just a tad.
Kept me a little busy. You know, the weight loss continued, you'll all be glad to know. So right now I'm still hovering at around 225 pounds lost total. But the thyroid cancer treatments took me out of the mix for a little while.
Yeah.
It's the lucky cancer. You know,
and they caught it really, really early.
They caught it very, very early. I was lucky that I have a fantastic doctor, and he sent me to fantastic specialists. And I'm with Cedars-Sinai, so yay, Cedars-Sinai HMO.
And
worked out very
isn't
nicely.
There a sense that they would not necessarily have caught this early if you had all the weight?
It was caught because my doctor felt the lump, right? So the weight loss allowed him to catch the cancer early. And even with that, when the surgeons actually were looking at the lumps, they were just like, I can't believe he felt this. It was like Princess and the Pea syndrome. All the surgeons were saying we would never have caught this, but the general practitioner caught it up.
Wow.
So, give your general practitioners a big hug.
Damn straight.
Some of these guys are and gals are freaking awesome.
GP.
We're sort of, I didn't want to bring it up on the show 'cause it's, you know, not really our topic, but, with the the end of actually late last week, I was officially declared cancer free.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
So
that one treatment, that's it. You're
that
done.
one big radiation treatment that's at the awesome. End of it kills all thyroid cells left in your body. And those of you who are on my Twitter feed at the time actually got to see pictures of my isolation chamber, which I think one of the geeklings actually looked at the pictures and said, "Oh my God, it's Dexter's kill room." Which it totally was. If you see the pictures, it's just
it was
that's
scary
what it was.
Looking.
It was scary. It was very scary. Yes, so cancer's done, and wow. I'm still working on getting my thyroid levels right. So
did they tape you down with Saran wrap?
Not me personally, but I had to sleep on some interesting materials.
Nuh-uh.
Like, yeah, there was like rubber sheets at the bed, you know, at the hospital, and the Saran wrap on every doorknob. And I mean, just a quick story. Everyone here has heard this before, but I think the listeners might find it fun. You're sitting in this room where paper is over every surface on the floor. The sheets are over every piece of furniture. Saran wrap is on every doorknob. The bathroom really does look like Dexter's kill room because there's Saran wrap on every single surface, right? Including the toilet, just wrapped in Saran wrap, which sounds like a bad practical joke waiting to happen.
Hard to pee on.
Yeah. And so this nuclear medicine technician comes in carrying this little trolley behind her. Like, it looks like a little red flyer wagon, right? The red radio wagons.
Yeah. This also sounds like the beginning of Nine Princes in Amber. Sorry, go on.
So there's this canister on there, and she's telling me, okay, now we're going to give you this pill out of this canister. It will be in a little tiny container. Put it from, just dump the container straight into your mouth. Do not put it in your hand. Straight from container into mouth. Do not touch the pill. Swallow as quickly as possible. Wow. I'm like, okay. So she hands me the canister. I swallow the pill, which you'd be surprised takes a fair amount of willpower when there's a person just wearing like the shirt for the you know the suit from that bombing movie last year,
mm-hmm.
the one
mm-hmm.
that won the Academy
Hurt
Award,
Locker,
Hurt
yeah.
Locker. It's like you're talking to someone in Hurt Locker, right? Who has this very smiling and motherly face behind the glass faceplate, you know? So I dump the pill in my mouth and like. I haven't even quite swallowed it all the way when she snatches the thing out of my hand, grabs the wagon, and flees the room post-haste, right? She's like,
you're like, what did I just put in my body?
There's a certain degree of paranoia attached to this. But so anyway, done. Life gets better. Life is back, getting back to normal now. So we hope, all of us are hoping that we'll be able to get more episodes in a more regular manner.
Yes.
Over the next year. And Lisa has kindly agreed to be our pinch hitter.
Yes.
When one of us can't make it.
Oh, Don, did your superpower show up or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, I know, exactly.
I am still waiting.
I think
the
they
cape
could
showed up,
at any
though.
The cape showed up. I have to share. While I was in the hospital, my friends had a get-together. And they on my Twitter feed, I was like, you know, 2 hours, superpower is not yet evident. 4 hours, thought I could fly, perhaps slight dementia, you know? Like, but no superpowers ever showed up, much to my disappointment. But my friends had to get together and made me a superhero costume while I was in the hospital called The Radiator, which has a complete with mask, sequined and feather boa cape. I'm not sure about the feather boa, but okay.
Why not?
I mean, it had something color-wise, but, you know, there's a certain connotations that come along with the
right,
feather boa
true,
on
yes.
a superhero costume. The best part, of course, was somewhere they found the green glowing Superman crystal from the first Superman movie.
Oh, cool.
As the wand that goes with the cape. So
awesome.
It's fantastic.
Yes. Awesome. Not only are you super, you're fabulous.
So I will be taking pictures of it once I get over to Lizette's and we have the time to just put some finishing touches on it to personalize. And
yes,
it's going to be awesome.
The Radiator.
The Radiator.
Coming soon.
Yeah. So at some point, I'm going to go to our forums and we're going to take a vote on what superpowers the Radiator should have.
Oh, okay. Mm. Excellent. Lisa, what you been up to?
Well, I've been, you know, guys know I've been working on this movie for the past year.
What movie would this be, Lisa?
This is Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods by Joss Whedon.
Indeed.
My goodness.
Now, I think I'm I think I'm not technically supposed to say anything since I went to a test screening, but I'm just going to say it was awesome.
Oh, Peter, thank you so much for saying that. And thank you so much for coming. Peter was my pinch hitter. And gave me such great support. We just needed smart people to come and see it and give us some advice. And
right.
So it was key.
There's the, at the end, they have this thing that you have to fill out where you have to talk about, like, the movie. You know, like, you have to say what you liked and everything. So I'm like writing and I'm running out of space and I'm turning the paper and writing along the edges, you know, like, it's so good and this was great and that was great. So again, I'm not supposed to say anything, but I'm just going to say, awesome. I cannot wait for people to see this.
Well, me too.
Well, I haven't seen a shoddy Lisa Lasik project yet. I mean,
it's so nice.
Maybe one of the Buffy episodes. Yeah.
Hey.
I'm dying for you guys to see it. Alas, our studio is under some financial duress. They're up for auction.
They're up for auction?
Oh, yeah. You know the story of MGM. They're burdened by huge debt.
I did not realize they were. I knew they were under debt. I didn't realize they were up for auction.
Yeah. This was has just been happening.
They all do the what's the one where they go through the portal through various Egyptian...
Stargate.
Oh. I think they do Stargate through MGM.
Yeah. They do. So. They do. That's like huge for them.
Huh.
But yeah, so right now it's scheduled for January of 2011. So there's a ways to go.
Is it still 3D now?
Actually, that's another thing pending because of all this. Okay. You know, we don't know what's going on with the studio. But it's something that, you know, we have some leeway to decide. Right. But you guys know, I hope that we don't have to do the conversion.
Well, after seeing Clash of the Titans, which I will be discussing in our new segment.
Oh, did you see it in 3D?
I actually specifically avoided it in 3D.
So did
because
I.
Because of all the negative reviews.
So did I. 3D. I was like, do I want the headache or do I just want to see
the
movie?
So let's talk about that in news.
All right.
Which, my goodness, I think it's news time now.
Cue the music.
Is that the music coming?
I think it is. So why don't you just continue on where you were going?
Clash of the Titans. So Lisa, you saw Clash of the Titans.
I did.
Did anybody else see it so far?
You know, I've actually avoided it because I heard it was bad.
Yeah, I heard the John Stewart review of it, and it made me laugh so hard that I avoided it. He said they took a movie that was 2D and made it 3D while being able to keep the characters 1D.
Yeah.
That's about right, yeah.
Yeah, about that.
But it was fun, right? I mean,
I actually didn't have that much fun with it. Like
you, but just like the unintentional comedy.
Yes,
of it,
yes. Some of it was so gratuitously bad.
Oh, hilarious!
I just love the fact that the Rancor is still working after all these years.
Yeah, he's one of the hardest working CGI monsters in Hollywood.
It's amazing that he's still got this job. I mean, it's fantastic.
I'm just sort of. I think what I tweeted was like, it's 20 times the budget of the first movie and 1/20th of the entertainment value.
Yes, it's so
they
true.
Didn't have Laurence Olivier.
It reminds you how good the original is in comparison. Like the original had a story.
It has story. It has
Hera.
Plot.
You know,
like, and it's sort of. I think Clash of the Titans is sort of summarizing for me everything we've talked about as far as CGI and special effects replacing story in Hollywood.
Yeah,
because you can look at the original where they had nothing. And
the effects were way better. They had Ray
Harryhausen.
Yes, the effects were
They had
so
Ray Harryhausen, admittedly.
Remember that statue that comes to life?
Yes.
Like,
which was beautiful in the first movie. Yeah,
me
and
too.
But also the fact that it wasn't all just one maniacal bad guy in the first one. They actually, the story came from so many different gods having so many different... agendas.
Yeah, there was politics. It was really
And like you were like, oh, like this is happening because this god doesn't want it to happen. Oh, that pissed off this god and he's going to do this.
Which is the whole point of the Greek pantheon.
Yeah.
Right. And then in this movie, they whittled it down to Liam Neeson and
Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah, you know? And that's it.
Yeah, and the other ones, like, I think they identified one of the other gods you saw.
Like maybe Poseidon for half a second.
Well, because he's got a trident. That's the only reason I was able to pick him. They name Apollo. And so I was like, oh, Apollo's going to do something. No, they're just going to name him and he's going to go away, you know?
And they literally go away. There's a point where there's like this council room of all the gods and he goes, go away! They all disappear.
And you never see them again.
Yeah.
And it's like, you kind of want to see them because everyone knows who the Greek gods. Everyone knows who the Greek gods are and you want to see what they did with them.
Kind of not a bad slip.
And they don't let you. You know, they literally don't let you. Like, you see, like, oh, I think that's Artemis. I kind of, nope, she's gone.
It's like a glimmer.
Wasn't
in the background.
Athena in the first one who had the owl?
Yes. Okay, now, this was a huge, I wish our listeners could have seen, like, Lisa and I both just sit up in our chairs.
Did they bring back Bubo?
I was enraged at what they did with Bubo.
It was horrible.
They literally flip the bird at the first movie and say, the first movie
is stupid
and we will mock it.
Yeah.
There's no
and
respect.
Meanwhile, the thing that they reveal, which I'm sure you will tell them.
I'm spoiler alert.
Yeah, this is the beginning.
So they go into the armory to prepare for the big war ahead, and they're pulling out weapons and stuff.
Right.
And this is Bubo. This is what Bubo gets reduced to.
Okay.
In this one scene, he pulls out Bubo. And it's not like a new version of Bubo. It's the old Bubo.
It's the actual owl.
Right? And he holds it up and he goes, what the heck is this thing? And it opens its eyes and it looks around. And
it looks awesome.
It looks awesome. And one of the other guys, one of the other nobodies from the movie looks at it and goes, oh, that's stupid. Don't worry about that.
And then he throws it.
And he throws it.
Back in like the trash bin.
Oh.
I know, and it hurt my heart.
It was an insult to everybody who enjoyed the first movie and went to the new one kind of going like, I wonder what they're going to do.
Right.
But the irony is that I really think that effect was the best thing in the movie. Yeah. Like, the rest of it was laughable.
They were so obsessive on their shaky cam, you know, and like, so like, there's a big scorpion fight, which is not blowing anything if you've seen the first movie.
Right.
You've had 30 years. I'm not going to warn you, spoiler alert on that one. But it's like it was like the show. It was like watching Transformers again. Like,
really?
There's something cool going on. Not really sure what.
A lot of noise and fury and
the one bright point for me
Medusa's,
was
blood goes on the ground and
yeah. But this it's something else.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's totally.
Caliban is lame in this one.
And so like, lame and has no personal agenda of any kind.
No. He's just like
I'm a robot.
Bad.
Yeah.
Raw. Then the Medusa scene, which to me was one of the best scenes of any of the original movies
so
of that
in the
time
original.
Period.
Let me just stop for a second and say, the Medusa scene, when I was a kid, I have very few memories of actually being in the theater, like specific moments. I mean, I remember movies, but I have very few, but I remember the Medusa scene because I remember sitting on my parents' lap in that darkened theater and being so terrified and putting my hands over my face and then peeking out because I couldn't look away. And it's like, it's such a cliche. But it was the one moment in my life when I lived that cliche.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's like, it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, to this day, that like that moment just.
And they sucked all the fear out of it.
Oh, totally.
It's just an action sequence with
just, like, tons of
a hot
in
chick
it.
With a snake body.
Yeah.
You know, and it's.
Oh, and then this really irritated me. I don't know if this irritated you, but her face changed when, you know, it's supposed to be like the gaze of Medusa that turns you to stone.
Yeah.
They had her face turn into a snake and like actively do this power to freeze people, which to me made no sense.
No,
like,
it was just an added extra effect for you to go like, ooh, pretty, look what
just
they did.
Just for the effect's sake.
Yeah.
But it took away from the whole Medusa
thing. This is one of the things that is a personal kind of pet peeve of mine when it comes to movies. When you remake a movie in Hollywood, just be really careful when you remake a good movie.
Psycho,
you know?
For instance.
Well, man.
Like, very seldomly
nothing
does
sacred.
A movie that's good that's remade stand up in any way. You know, and it's just really hard, especially when they say, okay, now that was a great movie. We've got to make it even better. And it's that whole thing where it's like Spinal Tap, where our things go up to 11, you know?
Yeah.
You can't do that after a certain point.
So I hate to put it in quite these terms, but if you're the Transformer set and you don't care about story, you don't care about plot, you don't care about character.
You want some flashy stuff.
You just
stuff
want something pretty and something with camera shaky and blood somewhere.
And there is, I have to say, some comedy value to be had, completely unintentional. For example, Release the Kraken is said not once, not twice, but three times.
Yeah.
And animatronic.
It's in his contract,
Sharon,
really.
You know? Oh, the animatronic
was hilarious.
Sharon.
Hilarious.
Yeah,
my sister and I were dying laughing.
Animatronic what?
Sharon. The boatman over across the river Styx.
Yeah. He's bad.
Oh, hilarious.
Yeah. You can almost see the guys with strings.
He's like rickety and
welcome
shaky.
To the Hall of Presidents.
That's exactly what it is.
Oh, really?
That's exactly what
I was
it
joking.
Is.
If you like
that
sort of crap, then this movie might be down your line. But to top it off, none of us saw it in 3D, partially because the warnings were the 3D was slapped on at the last minute.
Yes.
And horrifically bad.
Yeah.
The thing that I heard was like watching Clash of the Titans through a ViewMaster.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I've heard.
James Cameron talked a little bit about some of the challenges of 3D. And specifically, he said you don't cut as often when you're using 3D.
Yeah.
And you have to be careful how you cut, because it hurts your eyes to have to adjust so much.
This was 3D made by studio executives, not by a director.
Yeah. Right.
And it was very clear.
Right.
Yeah, wow. And having been down that 3D road, I do know that there's so much work that goes into it. And when we heard 6 weeks, our jaws dropped because we were like, they're just going to do... I mean, luckily, a lot of the movie was in 3D. I mean, it was all animated, but still, it was just too quick.
They'll just run a filter on it or something. And just, So, other geek news.
What you got, Pete?
Okay, so there's a guy named Tim Ball, who, if you guys have never heard of Tim Ball, he is a Canadian scientist who is a climate change denier. And so there's this really interesting thing where basically he went to present to the University of Victoria Young Conservatives Club, kind of sort of expecting to have kind of a home run because he thought he was kind of hitting to the, you know, to his team. And what he didn't realize is that that college is very active in terms of climate studies. And a lot of the people who actually showed up were people, although they were conservative, who were actively involved in this. And so basically, it was really interesting where basically as he would go down and he'd start to make these claims, they were able to intelligently refute his claims
on a one-to-one basis.
Wow. Great.
So he would, he'd make claims that sounded very intelligent, like, look, there's the fact that, the Earth's orbit isn't exactly perfect, and so there are fluctuations in temperatures that have to do with the Earth's orbit and tilt and axis and all these things, and that they don't take this in account when they do these studies. And the scientist, this kid raises his hand, he goes, excuse me, I work for the people that do that, I'm in that program, and that's absolutely normal, everybody takes that for account, and he would literally, go through that. So it was really kind of an interesting thing where this happened. And it was like the one-to-one kind of conversation. And what was also interesting was that he didn't stop. he kind of didn't. It wasn't a conversation. He didn't take any of this new information in and process it. He wouldn't listen to what they were saying,
or he didn't argue back with another point.
Exactly. So it was. Now, what's really interesting to me is that then some people started kind of having a conversation about this afterwards, and they started talking about the fact that people like this guy receive a lot of their funding from oil companies.
Yeah.
So what's really fascinating to me is this sort of concept of one of the tactics that a lot of corporations use in order to kind of keep science from having impact these days is, they go out and they fund a bunch of people who run around saying the opposite, and sound semi-credentialed. And, say stuff that sounds really good, but is patently false lies. And it's that whole thing, that the...
Or at least based enough in truth to offer a big enough reasonable doubt that enough people will jump on the bandwagon and offer,
Exactly.
Offer an alternative premise.
Right.
Where, if you actually examine the premise, it doesn't have a foundation.
Right.
But this is actually a tactic that was invented by the tobacco companies.
That's what
in
I was
going to
say. Yeah. It's 4 out of 5 doctors smoke these cigarettes, or whatever, that type of stuff.
Well, with the tobacco company, the science was coming out proving there's a link between tobacco and cancer.
Yeah.
So the tobacco companies didn't need to disprove those. They needed to make you distrust the scientists.
Right.
Right.
So all they did was they would have one scientist going no, they're wrong. They just do it wrong. They don't care, accuse the scientists of wrongful thinking.
And what they're basically doing is introducing static, extra signal noise into the, out in the universe. So you can't, it's too much information for people to process.
Huh.
I just find that such an interesting and kind of awful thing about what's happening with our world today.
Or that scientists can be bought like that. It seems
counter
to science.
You'd be surprised. entered the news cycle, I think, a week or 2 weeks ago, where all of a sudden there was this big controversy of weather people, like TV show weather people who present the weather, versus meteorologists.
And some of those TV weather people are meteorologists as well.
Not many, though. Hmm. That's actually not the case in any of the weather studios, the news stations that I've been to.
Okay.
They have meteorologists on staff, but often the TV personalities are not, So basically what they were saying was that the weather people are used to looking at weather very short term, whereas meteorologists study weather over the course of decades.
Right.
Right. And so meteorologists are almost unanimously saying, yes, weather, climate change is an issue. where like the weather people were like, no, we haven't seen any real issues over the past 5 years. So it's like, okay.
You know, and again, it's not to say that, you know, there's not legitimate debate to be had about climate change. It's just that this is not where it's coming from.
My problem right. with legitimate debate in scientific circles and political circles right now is not that there isn't intelligent debate to be had. It's that basically we choose to look at the other side and say, you know, your ideas are not only wrongheaded, but they're completely false. And there's no acknowledgement that there might be important information to be had from the other side.
You see, that's very interesting because I acknowledge that that is a problem, but I actually see a different problem as being a bigger one, which is the way our media is forced to present things is to present any two opposing ideas with equal validity. So even if one is absolute total bull hockey,
right?
Like, you know, the governor of Alaska has more foreign policy experience because she can see Russia from her front porch. As you know, saying the guy who is, you know, served under the Secretary of State for the past 15 years has, you know, as much, she has as much foreign policy experience as he does,
right?
Presenting that as a valid argument because they have to show both sides of the story, I see that as being a much bigger issue.
Okay.
Yeah, I see the same thing. I mean, you know, that they tend to take people who are at such opposite extremes,
yeah,
and present them as legitimate, and you know, they don't tend to have like left, right, and center. You know, they don't tend to give you any sort of context that,
right,
you know, 99% of scientists think this, you know, as opposed, and this is in the 1% on the other side.
Right.
My issue, I suppose, is that there's so much negativity in terms of it. Is it like no airplane, you know, if you have Delta versus AA, right? They don't walk around going, well, their planes crash. Right. They basically say the fundamental ideas of what we're trying to do are sound, but we're better at it than they are. Mm-hmm. Right. And what I see a lot in terms of argument, the way they're handled in the news now, is they're basically saying, no, that side, their planes crash. And it makes us distrust the actual nature of government, of science, of everything.
I understand what you're saying, and I agree that that's there. I totally do. Mm-hmm. I think that there's the people who want to muddy the waters tend to rely on that more, you know, than and that's not a left or right thing, despite what all of our listeners listening to me talk think I might be implying. I think any extreme position tends to want to kick up some silt in the water, and they do that by making all statements absolute.
And it's totally effective as far as muddying the waters. Like, it works to be like,
it
no,
works every time.
This is wrong and blah. You know.
There's this great thing with Robert Kennedy where he, you know, he basically, I think it was Robert Kennedy that said this. He talked about how he would travel around the U.S. and he would go to places where there was, you know, sort of the opposite side of perspective. And he said, you know, what's interesting is that when you talk to people on a one-to-one basis, most people are actually pretty much the same people, you know, with the same interests. And we're a lot closer than people think for the most part. You know, it's just that when you watch the news and you watch different political parties, that it makes us feel like we're so much further apart than we really are.
All right. That's a good way to put it. So I'm going to take it to a different part of the world. Video gamers accused of fixing matches. Police in South Korea are investigating allegations of match fixing by professional players of StarCraft.
Oh.
They've been throwing the games. They know this. They've been betting on their own games, and they've been throwing it. They are the Pete Roses of StarCraft.
Wow.
Because StarCraft is so huge. Yeah. I'm sure there's big...
So huge in South Korea. I mean, these are. I think some players are getting $250,000 for a tournament.
You're kidding.
I mean, they're making money. Wow. In South Korea.
There's match promoters.
Yeah.
There's
leagues
like
of professional players compete in televised tournaments and receive coaching and sponsorship. However, some players and officials are alleged to have accepted bribes from gambling websites to rig the games. There's been little coverage of the event in the country's mainstream media, but the Korea Times website claims that the Korea Esports Association, God love you, Korea, filed charges against individual players and coaches in March of 2010. According to the newspaper, StarCraft accounts for 70% of so-called esports activities in South Korea. So,
wow.
It's interesting.
I love that StarCraft is still so huge
there.
Like,
how old is StarCraft now?
It's pretty old. 6 years? 7 years? Wouldn't you say 2003, conservatively?
No.
You say
StarCraft
older than
is
that?
Significantly older than that.
Yeah.
2003, you're talking World of Warcraft.
I was thinking like 10 years.
10 years?
Yeah, really? No, I would say even older.
All right, Pete will look it up. Let's move on.
I got my iPhone out. We'll see what we can
do. I'm guessing 1997, 1998.
It doesn't surprise me entirely because as a lover of StarCraft, it's like chess. It's a game that can...
Well, it's StarCraft 2, so I mean, that's what they're playing.
Oh, StarCraft 2.
Yeah, I mean, that's already. What they're still playing. They're obviously, you know.
I'm waiting for StarCraft 2.
Yeah, they just say StarCraft here, but I'm assuming they mean StarCraft 2.
No, wait, StarCraft 2 isn't out yet.
Is it StarCraft 2 or StarCraft 3?
I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's StarCraft 2. Hasn't there's only been
yet.
One.
2 hasn't come out yet. Okay.
It's due soon, right? Like this year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the one they're dividing up into the different faction releases,
yes,
right? Yeah, okay,
right.
StarCraft
that's
2.
Right.
Yeah.
Lisa, what do you got?
All right, I have a little story here about the Library of Congress is archiving all of our tweets. Like every tweet that's ever been tweeted since the very first tweet.
Now I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's sort of fascinating.
Okay, all right, but there is, I can't explain that it does not include your private tweets.
Okay,
direct messages, exactly.
Okay, but like replies, are replies?
Yes, anything that's out there in the feed, anything that's public, which, you know, most of Twitter has been set up to be.
Yes.
And so, yeah. And I think the reason is there is some historical significance, like they mentioned, particularly
absolutely.
Like when Obama won.
When Obama won, the Green Revolution. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. So it, and then it's going to be searchable, you know, it's just crazy.
I wonder if it's public access, I mean, like, can it be used against you in court? Can it be used to verify your location to give you alibis?
You that's know? Interesting.
Because now you can Twitter your location too.
Yes.
You know?
The location wherever your phone might be.
Where your
maybe
phone
not you.
Is. That could be the loophole. You can't actually prove that you were there during that Twitter.
Right.
You know, somebody else could be doing it for you to give you an alibi.
Ha.
Or hacked your account and Twittering for you.
It's interesting. Huh. It's something just to think about as you're
that
putting
is,
together.
That is
a great episode of LA Law there. Oops. Oh, well, 10 years too late.
You found out when StarCraft came out, Peter?
Oh, yeah.
Little update, 1998.
1998.
Wow.
Called it.
Wow.
Thank you.
12
You're right,
years.
12 years.
12 years, and it's still going strong.
Shorter.
It
was a great game. Still play.
Anybody else got news?
I have taken up far too much time with Clash of the Titans.
All right. So. Petey?
No, I'm done.
Nothing? I got a flying car. I'll put it on my links. And another thing called Shadow Unit, which I think people should check out, which is basically a science fiction story about a group of unrealistically sexy FBI agents struggling to protect humanity from the worst monsters imaginable.
Nice.
And it's basically an online weblog of a TV show that doesn't exist, done in TV show form.
Oh my.
As in scripts.
Yeah, I, it's more stories than scripts.
Oh, I see. Like
but
treatments.
Like treatments.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Lisa?
I've got the Hugo nominees, which
excellent.
Were just
really?
Announced. And I was interested to see if you guys have read any of these books or can recommend. The one of the best novel nominees that I have heard the most about is The City in the City by China. I don't know how to
I
pronounce
heard
China
name. Phillips, the World Wrestling Federation chick.
Mieville.
Uh-huh.
he wrote Perdido's
Station. Okay.
Yeah. But I've heard that book is fantastic. Another book on the list is Julian Comstock, A Story of 22nd Century America by Robert Charles Wilson, who wrote this the book Spin that I absolutely loved. So I'm dying to read that one.
Isn't Girl Genius on there?
Oh, yes, it is indeed. I'll get to that. So the other nominees for Best Novel, Bone Shaker by Cherry Priest. Or Cherry.
Didn't read it.
And Palimpsest by Catherine M. Valenti.
Cool.
Wake by Robert J. Sawyer. You guys know Robert J. Sawyer. He's done a ton of great sci-fi. And The Wind-Up Girl.
Do you actually get to read?
Now that I just finished, I'm
you're just gonna
like
you're gonna read the whole list.
Yeah, I'm really I will. I'm excited. I'm excited to be able to read. It's such a, like a luxury. And so the last one is Wind Up Girl, Paolo. I'm really forgive me, I can't pronounce his last name, but you can see it on the Hugo Awards.
Wind Up Girl by
nominee,
Paolo.
You know the Hugo website. All right, so let us move on from books to.
It's an awful. We'll post the whole list on the website. You can see it.
Yeah, you definitely should. Oops. You know what? I'm missing a page.
Okay. Well, what other ones were your favorites?
Well, this is such a shame because I wanted to mention the short form for best TV show, essentially, mm-hmm. sci-fi TV show, and it was like four episodes of Doctor Who, which nice. I know you would have seen, and then one Dollhouse, the first, the pilot of Dollhouse. Good.
So you get a little applause for that.
And then, I'm doing this from memory now, this totally sucks, but the film nominees, District 9 was on there, which is great, cool. Star Trek, of course. And then Moon, which, have you guys seen Moon?
Yep.
Yeah, we did not talk about Moon at all in our Geekies, by the way.
Oh, you guys!
In the Geekies, it did
Moon.
Not. Moon
we
did not
we barely up. Gave it a nod.
Aaron talked about it,
right?
But it didn't get nominated for
anything.
I loved Moon. I would love it to win.
I quite liked it.
To me, it was just great old style sci-fi, like old school. And then Up was also on the list, which is interesting. All right. So, and then the last little shout out that I noticed in the nominations, which I was very excited to see, is for Best Fanzine. Under the category of Best Fanzine, for the first time, a podcast has been nominated.
Us?
And alas.
Oh, damn.
I know. You'd think. But I thought that was great, a great, you know, new thing for all of us. And the podcast is one I happen to have listened to for years, and I absolutely love. So I want to introduce you all to it. It's called Starship Sofa.
We know about it.
Oh, you do?
Spoken
oh,
about
great.
Many times.
Have
oh,
we?
Oh, great.
I don't recall Starship Sofa. I do not recall Starship Sofa either.
Oh, well, Matt, someone's talked about it because Aaron's, I know of it. Aaron's talked about it many times.
Oh, I love it. I've been listening forever. This guy, Tony Smith, it's British, runs it, and it's a perfect, like, I would call it a fanzine because it has articles. They do short fiction. They do longer form fiction. They have great narrators who read these stories. Nice. They once did a Hugo special where they read all the nominated short stories, and then it was great because you got to hear them all and then be like, oh, I'm rooting for this one. And they have great articles, great commentaries, and it's a lovely show.
Is that Starship Sofa?
Starship yes. Sofa. Okay. I'll check it out.
Yeah, guys, fine.
Why don't we move on to our topic?
Why don't we segue there?
So his whole thing came about was about a year ago, I saw an article on the internet where this guy talked about why he would not be attending his 10-year reunion, or his, I don't know if it might have been his 20-year reunion. And Matt's going to read this really fast.
Okay. You want me to read the whole thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Very off topic, why I won't be at my high school reunion. This comment thread has gotten long enough to start causing some server load problems. As a result, I'm closing the comments here and have added a new post where discussions of this past can continue. If you're not interested in completely off-topic personal rambling, stop reading now. Okay. I graduated from high school in 1984, which means that this year is my graduating class 25th year reunion. As a result, a bunch of people from my high school class have been trying to friend me on Facebook, sending me email, and trying to convince me to come to the reunion. I don't feel like replying to them individually, which is why I'm writing here. As pretty much a reader of any reader of this blog who isn't a total idiot must have figured out by now, I'm a geek. I've been so since I was a kid. My dad taught me about bell curves and standard deviations. That's the kind of kid I was. I was also very small, 5'1" when I started high school, 5'3" my junior year. Even when I shot up in height to nearly 5'11" between my junior and senior year, I weighed under 120 pounds. So, thanks, small, skinny, hyperactive geek. Like most geek kids, I have a rough time in school. I don't think that my experience was particularly unusual. I know a lot of people who had it worse, but I think it was slightly worse than average because the administration in the school system that I went to tolerated an extraordinary amount of violent bullying. Almost every geeky kid gets socially ostracized, almost all get mocked. In fact, almost all face some physical abuse. The main determinant of just how much physical abuse they get subjected to is the school administration. And the administration of my school really didn't care. Bruises? You must be uncoordinated to bump into things. Broken fingers? Hey, it happens. We're sure it must have been an accident. What do you want, an armed guard to follow your kid around? In high school, I didn't have a single real friend in my graduating class. I had very few friends who graduated a year before me. I had a few who graduated one or two years after me. But being absolutely literal, there was not a single person in my graduating class who came close to treating me like a friend, not one. Like I said before, the way I was by my classmates in high school was pretty much typical for a geek. At best, I was ignored. At worst, I was beaten. In between, I was used as sort of status enhancer. Telling people that you'd seen me doing some supposedly awful or hysterical thing was a common scheme for getting ahead in certain social circles. In the most extreme case, someone painted a swastika onto the street in front of my house with gasoline and lit it. In autumn, in a wooded neighborhood. I can't even pretend that I wasn't an easy target or I didn't respond in a way that encouraged my tormentors. I was a hyperactive geek. My social skills were awful. I don't think that I deserve the way I was treated, but all the same, I do think that my hyperactivity and my lack of social skills both helped make me such a good target and discourage anyone from intervening on my behalf. Don't think it excuses anybody who abused me. It just doesn't excuse the bastards who made up stories about me. It doesn't justify the people who threw me against walls. It doesn't explain why the guy who broke my fingers because he wanted to know what it would sound like. And it doesn't absolve the people who watched and laughed while that happened. Now it's 25 years since I got out of that miserable fucking hellhole, and people from my high school class are suddenly getting in touch, sending me email, trying to friend me on Facebook, and trying to convince me to bring my family to the reunion. It's a picnic reunion. Full family invited. Even some of the people who used to beat the crap out of me on a regular basis are getting in touch as if we're old friends. My reaction to them, what the fuck is wrong with you people? Why would I want to do that? So
you know, the whole concept here, you know, I mean, obviously this guy probably went through worse than, you know,
any of us,
or probably most people we know.
He may be an extreme example.
He's right. A pretty extreme example. But, you know, we heard recently this girl that killed herself because of bullying.
Right, that's in court right now.
In fact, and these kids are getting pretty seriously
right, and cyberbullying is now getting huge as well because people have the, I guess, they can create false accounts, they can create a level of anonymity within somebody to create almost like a terrorist field where it's not directly I might get punched in the face if I bully somebody. Now I have the internet to allow me to bully somebody, you know, over a chat room.
So the bullying follows you home. Like, you can't ever escape the bullying because they can continue on, you know, tweeting their bullying.
Right. You know, there was a case not too long ago where there was a young girl who had a crush on a boy, and these other girls went and created a Facebook account for the boy and pretended to be interested in her. And, you know, and then, I mean, just destroyed her, you know, just absolutely destroyed her. So what's really interesting is that, you know.
Well, that's interesting also because that's girl bullying, which you don't hear about that much.
Well, in fact, that's what happened with this girl that killed herself.
I don't.
Had to do with the girl bullying, specifically because she had slept with both their boyfriends.
Ha.
And so and she was Irish, which allowed them to, you know, both be angry at her but single her out in a very specific way from the rest of the group and just destroy her. I mean, you know, so, you know, it's interesting because bullying is a common thing. You know, it happened. I mean, we all, if it didn't happen to us, we were aware of it.
Yes.
That it happened in school.
For sure.
So, you know.
Like, we all know cases.
Were you bullied, Lisa?
I don't think I was bullied personally.
I'm actually really glad you're here now because there is a level of cattiness and sort of...
Yes, which, I mean, I would say any girl in high school would have been privy to on some level. Like, you know, we all know there's like the popular people and the unpopular people. And it was very clear which group you were in.
Where did you fit in?
I was definitely a nerd.
But were you an unpopular nerd, or did you just have a different clique?
Well, my case is special because I moved around a lot as a kid, so I got that going for me too.
The new kid.
It takes a certain degree of intimacy to actually bully someone, you know?
Yeah.
Yes. So I might have been exempt, but in any case, I mean, I think the things that you hear about mean girls, I feel like everybody in high school has seen, any girl in high school has seen that, and girls lie and you know, hurt you that way too. So,
yeah, I think there is girl bullying. I think it just takes a different form than guy bullying.
Right. What about you, Don? You were the fat kid, so.
I was the fat kid, but I was also the smart fat kid.
Mm-hmm.
So, and
you were
I was
also
a geek.
Big. Were you big in high school?
I was huge. Yeah, I mean, I was always a head taller than anyone else in the class.
That'll insulate you a little bit.
Well, you know, you still get called names, and the older classmen decided to bully me. Like at one point, they broke into my locker. They pulled my bag out. They're ripping up my papers and stuffing them down the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, I watched them. They were really stupid.
Right.
So I watched them casing my locker, closed my locker, walked away, walked around the corner, waited a second, went back and found them doing it and turned them in. You know, but I went to the principal, which of course made me so fucking popular. You know?
Oh,
so
no.
It's like one of those things, you know, but, you know, I was also
going to go through channels.
Yeah. So I didn't get bullied by my classmates, but I did get bullied by upperclassmen because I was physically bigger. And
right.
They could, you know, they could still physically overpower me,
mm-hmm.
you know. But within my class, honestly, I always had a buffer. There was always someone a little worse off than I was.
Okay.
Who wasn't quite as strong as me, had a few social skills less than me.
Right.
So as long as there was one of those in the class, it was like a decoy.
Hmm.
You know, I'm not proud of that, but
what about you, Pete?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I got bullied at different levels. I mean, different degrees. First of all, you know, when I was in high school, you know, I hit different portions of that. I mean, you know, I never got like beat up per se. You know, where someone like really like I went home with a shiner, but you know, you got called names, you got the general stuff.
Do you get punched in the arm a lot?
You know, not so much that. But when I went away to high school,
oh, that's right, you were at a boys boarding school.
It was a co-ed boarding school. But when I went away to boarding school, that was when it got a little more intense for two reasons. First of all, just because I went from a place where I was like the smart kid to a place where everyone was the smart kid.
Yeah.
And so suddenly there was a lot of, you know, part of where I think bullying comes from is a search for identity, for status, you know, trying to have a sense of superiority, a sense of
establishing a pecking order of
meaning,
some sort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And so I went to a place where there wasn't a pecking order. And the second part of it was I suddenly had a roommate at this place who was had been there the year before me and, to be honest, was a complete and total douchebag and a dick. And he was friends with the people that were in my dorm that were my class, or at least he was. You know, he had a relationship with them, and because I didn't like this guy and I avoided him, I wound up not hanging out with anyone my age. I actually hung out with people the year before me, you know, just because, you know, but he made my life miserable while I was, you know, rooming with him. To this day, I sort of hate the bastard. But saw him at the 10-year reunion, and I swear to God, the guy looked like Darth Vader. I mean, you could tell that he had not gone out into the world and become a better person. He was still
he's your nemesis.
Now, what's interesting though is, you know, we can see this kind of in the workplace too. We all hear about certain bosses that are kind of that way. They're bullies,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know. So it's not like this is something that's not existing in the real world, you know, and that only exists for kids. You know, it's got its adult variation too, but we tolerate it in a different way, you know, or we look at it in a different way. You know,
well, and it manifests a slightly different way. Like that bully that beat you up in the locker room and flushed your, you know, whatever down the toilet, can't do that when he's your boss,
right?
No. You know, but he can make snide comments. He can
make you really unhappy.
Yeah. He can downplay your work. You know,
make you uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and they'll use the same skills they learned as a bully.
I heard stories about an editor who abused his assistants so much he would give them impossible tasks to do and then yell at them for not doing it. It was that kind of game.
Oh, right.
And they lived in terror of him. Also, this editor kept a loaded gun in the cutting room. So
whoa,
yeah, he was a loony. But yeah, he played power games, and I know there are people who, when they are in a position of power and they have underlings that they can mistreat, they will. And I absolutely hate that.
Hmm.
You know, it is funny how it translates into the actual workplace.
Yeah. I mean, where is that? I mean,
we as geeks do that in some ways?
Right.
Like, you know, when we, you know, one of the things we were talking about, it was geek snobbery.
That's the other side of it, yeah.
Which is like, you know, okay, you like Star Trek? Which Star Trek do you like? You like the new generation?
Right.
Shh. Really?
That Don, it's no the next generation. Commentary. It's not even the new generation. Come on, Don.
Or, you know, like...
TNG,
you know,
hello?
Wait, you thought Darth Vader was named, you know, Kinia? No, it's Anakin, you douchebag. You know, like,
right.
Just using information as a weapon rather
right.
than a communication point.
Right. You know? That my view on that is always the triumph, the insult dog. view of Star Wars when everybody's outside and he goes, you know, what was Han Solo frozen in? And everybody just does this big like roll of the eyes. They're like, carbonite. And he's like, no, the answer is, why the fuck do you care?
Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
you know, what's interesting is what I do remember from being young. You know, like, for example, I remember someone who was one of my friends and who was overweight, who I made fun of, you know, just one day. It was just one day because I learned my lesson, because I thought I was safe because there were two rows of desks between me and him, or he and I. And, you know, he walked right through the desks, picked me up, turned me upside down, and dropped me on my head. At which point I realized that this probably wasn't the smartest move. But the point that I'm making is that
I had to teach that lesson a few times too.
I'm sure you did, and that's why you didn't get bullied. But you know, but the point is that like even amongst friends, you know, there's that kind of like jostling and you making fun of each other and you're teasing, you know, but there's a point where it stops and you know, you don't necessarily like it when that's happening either, even from your friends.
And you don't know where the sensitivity is to whatever, you know, whatever thing you happen to pick on.
And it's coming from, but it's still coming from a certain place. It's coming from trying to have a sense of superiority over the other person, a pecking order, you know, a sense of a place in the universe. And it's a very natural thing, but it's a very awful thing. Natural doesn't necessarily mean good. You know, it's a very natural thing to get angry and punch someone or stab someone. That doesn't mean it's a good thing. You know, it's an impulse that you have to learn to control, you know, because it's improper. So it's interesting that we, you know, that even geeks do this to each other, right? You know, I remember that the biggest bully I ever had to deal with was another geek who just decided he had it in for me and tried to pick a fight with me every day on the way home from, you know,
from sci-fi club.
Well, yeah, exactly. We get off the bus every day, and you know he'd try and pick a fight, but neither of us was willing to throw the first punch. You know,
because
we were geeks.
You
so
go
there might be a punch. I'm like, you know, you want to hit me? Hit me. You hit me first. You know, it's like, you know, then he'd push me. Go, no, you hit me first, and it'd be like, you know, nothing ever came of it. You know, so
jostling.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like two Aikido masters.
Exactly.
Come on, make a move.
Do it. Yeah.
So I'm going to say something that's going to be probably a little unpopular. You know, which is to say, we look at this girl that killed herself, and you know these girls that were bullying her, you know they were angry at her because she had slept with their boyfriends, right? That seems to me like a pretty normal behavior, you know. I'm just saying, it seems to me like most people would be angry at someone else that slept with the person that they felt connected to,
right?
And that they would seek some form of revenge, right? And so, to me, in a weird way, I think that the problem here was not so much that these 16-year-olds were doing a normal behavior. The problem here was that the authorities and the adults didn't step in here and to say to them, this is inappropriate.
I would say it's not abnormal for these teenagers to have this emotion. Mm-hmm. But we do have to say, especially to teenagers who have now been clinically proven to be, you know, they have enough hormones running around their brains to make them clinically insane, mm-hmm. you know, that we have to say these behaviors that you're doing are unacceptable. And it mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily have to be the authorities or the parents, but we have to, well, I guess it does, because somebody has to instill it in
them. I feel like the parents and the authorities and the school administration aren't going to know about this.
Yeah, they've got a 17 and an 18-year-old boy that are now up for statutory rape because they slept with a 15-year-old girl. Okay. Now, if we put every 17-year-old boy that slept with a 15-year-old boy up to statutory rape, and by the way,
well, or girl,
or vice versa, and the prison sentences for this are really fucking serious.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Okay.
Well, and you become a pedophile for those.
Yeah, right? I actually have an app on my iPhone now that will tell you all of sexual offenders who live in your general area.
Right.
Right.
You can just bring up all the sexual offenders in your neighborhood with their address, with their photograph, with their phone number, and the offense they committed.
Wow. So does it have like a map and all little dots?
Little dots. It's like your iPhone GPS system with all the different little destinations. There's mm-hmm. turns out there's two sexual predators on my block. You know? But again, with these things, it's like apparently the context of these is so broad that they may have like accidentally locked themselves out of their apartment with like a towel on. And that can be considered indecent exposure, and that adds them to the sexual offenders registry list. They could have been a 16-year-old boy who slept with his 15-year-old girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Gets added to the list. Right. You know,
or it's sort they of could insane. Be a seriously nasty sexual predator.
Right. Absolutely. And it makes it difficult to know. Like, if this list was more selective on the people who got put on there, it could actually be more useful in knowing, you know, if you're in danger.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But that said, folks, I apologize, but my car is out of commission, and I am at the whim of somebody else's car right now to get where I have to be today. So I'm afraid that I am bowing out of this episode.
Oh, no.
Donnie is stepping out of the episode right now.
Leaving the rest of bullying to your capable hands. So guide us on home.
Bye, Don.
Bye, Don. So, you know, it's like I bumped into there's a ex-con / homeless guy that sometimes asks for money up over here at the the local subway. And one day I happened to be walking along and he starts a conversation with me, very scary conversation, in which he starts to explain how he talked to the police and they told him he could do whatever he wanted to the local sexual predators, and how he grabbed bleach or something like that and threw it into one guy's eyes. You know, just knocked on the door. When the guy opened the door, threw it in the guy's
There's
eyes.
There's no way the cops are condoning this or setting someone loose.
He's
like
insane.
That?
He's insane. Okay. He's insane. But the point being that this guy, you know, is going off and saying, "Hey, you know, I'm angry and I want to get rid of my anger." And I mean, or maybe he's just making the story up. Who knows?
And he could be making the story up, but and like, he could be wanting attention from you too. Mm.
Who knows what happened? But you know, there's sort of all sorts of weird stuff. So anyway, the thing being that, to go back to the original point, you've got this 17-year-old boy and an 18-year-old boy who've had sex with this 15-year-old girl who are now, you know, up to going to jail. Now, let me ask you a question. What 17-year-old boy do you know that's going to not sleep with a 15-year-old girl because they're going to think it's statutory? I mean, they're not – at that age, they are not at
they're
a
not
place
thinking.
where they're able to make
intelligent decisions. I don't know what state this –
But there are some statutory rape laws
that are very, like, that are sort of a little out of touch with the times because you couldn't possibly prosecute all these cases.
And the point being that that's what parents are here for. It's their jobs, and obviously they're not doing it, but it's their jobs to be intricately involved in the lives of their kids, to set boundaries for them on these things. And today it's so freaking hard to do that because we live in such a hypersexualized society.
Well, we live in a hypersexualized society, but we also live in a society that is getting more and more rules. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you think about it, when I was a kid, I remember the distance that I could play, you know, and I felt like I could go block to block. And nowadays, when I think about the way I'm raising my child, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, basically Chris Rock makes the joke, you know, when I was a kid, you go block to block and it's like that street to this street and you can go to that house, to this house. Now you're just basically you're stapling one foot to the floor and just go just run in a circle.
Right, you know?
And that what's interesting is we are providing more and more strictures, but it doesn't seem to be, you know, making the world any less dangerous.
Right. Additionally, we have so much information because part of what made us, when we grew up with a certain ignorance.
We were so naive.
Look, if I saw any type of pornography, it was my father's Playboys. Okay. And so if I saw anything, all I was seeing was a naked woman. My understanding of what sex was somewhat limited. You know what I mean?
Right.
To a book with line drawings of what sex looked like.
Right.
You know, today, any teenager who gets access to a computer that doesn't have some sort of cyber nanny on it can see things that, like, I still would prefer not to see. You know what I'm saying? You know, I mean, like,
there's nothing you can't see on the internet.
There's nothing.
Yes.
Everything is out there.
Yes.
You know, and it's just, you know, there's so much information that it normalizes a certain amount of adult behavior that kids aren't necessarily ready for it.
Okay, so if we are, so to take that, if we are normalizing adult behavior, then are we expecting these children to basically behave like adults when their hormones are making them behave like teenagers have always behaved? You know, otherwise we wouldn't have plays like Romeo and Juliet.
Scientifically speaking, they know for a fact that kids have difficulty making intelligent, rational decisions because they just can't do it. Their brains are not at that point, you know? So,
but we are providing them or society has provided them with things which will grow them up quicker in terms of their knowledge.
With a richer degree of adult opportunities
these
days.
To benefit or a flaw.
Exactly. You know? So, I mean, it's like,
now, the thing is, does that also make us more distinct in terms of our social behavior? Because with bullying, you know, it's always the kids who don't interact well socially. I mean, you were the nerdy kid. I was an orchestra kid. I was lucky.
I was too. I think I have like the hat trick or whatever, the complete set. Okay, like I was playing clarinet, you know, in the band. I mean,
oh, I was in madrigals and wore tights around the school and stuff like that. The thing that I think I was lucky at, I was a nerd in my sort of elementary and junior high school years. I mean, I was voted bookworm and all of these other things. And then in eighth grade, I did a play and it made sense to me, and suddenly I knew I was going to be an actor, and I took more personality traits from the role that I played in this play than of who I was. And so ninth grade, we moved, and I decided to reform who I was in ninth grade. So I got to still be an orchestra kid.
You got to start over fresh.
Exactly. I got a do-over. So I got to be an orchestra kid. I got to be a Madrigals kid. I got to be all those things, but I got to do it on my terms. And basically because I had a few months or weeks or almost a full year of people kind of not knowing who I was. And so I could establish who I was in whatever way, shape or form that I was. And I'm lucky enough to be facile, at social situations. If I had been less than facile and still been the nerdy orchestra kid, then I don't know if I would have been able to escape as much. But, my who I am is defined by the fact that I got to recreate myself,
And you got into acting so young.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
And I saw that it worked in a real life situation on a daily basis and made me less of a nerd and stopped me from being the guy who just looked at the girl and went, oh, my God, she's so cute. She'll never talk to me. To being a guy who actually got to date people and people who I may not have been the coolest kid in school, but people thought was nice and neat.
One thing that's interesting is there is a movie called Ben X, which is a foreign film, and I can't remember exactly where it was shot, but it's basically about a kid with Asperger's syndrome that gets bullied and how he sees the world, his issues, and what he's put through, and ultimately kind of how he resolves the issue, this movie, when it's shown, drops bullying some astronomical amount, which is something like 80%.
Oh, really?
Because again, when we're asking kids to make decisions, when you give them certain information, it helps them make better decisions. And this gives them the information of what it feels like to be bullied. Where oftentimes when someone's bullying someone, all they're really experiencing is kind of the anger they have at someone because of some reason. Mm-hmm. Or a feeling of superiority. They're not thinking about how the other kid's feeling at that age. So, maybe that's one possible answer, is to give a little more information.
There's also a thing is that I always notice where, everybody wants to be sort of know their place in the village. They want to know I'm the blacksmith's apprentice, or they want to know who they are within the village. The problem is we have such a huge global village now, is that I think anybody who just goes on the internet knows that they're a tiny little small cog in the gigantic wheel of this planet, and they go, where do I really fit in? How do, every teenager wants to know. I mean, that's why there's so much fiction that deals with it. The Twilight Saga, for God's sakes. They want to know that they're different and that somebody can reach down and pull them out of anonymity and say, no, you're great. You have that special spark within you. Mm-hmm. So when you're going home and you're accessing this internet, I mean, as a teenager, I would think that I would just feel like I would want to show that I was one of the cool kids, that I did have this special spark so much more than when I was a kid.
I would think that the internet gives everybody a voice now. Like when we were little, we didn't have blogs,
right.
Personal, individual things going out there. And so in some ways, it does, I think it must allow kids to connect, like let's just say geeks, for example. Mm-hmm. To find other geeks with this. I just say, not that. I would have any investment. But, wouldn't you think if you were like, oh, I'm having difficulty finding my social circle or whatever.
Yeah. But have you found more geeks and more friends connecting through being in Los Angeles? Or have you found more, and maybe this is just a part and parcel of us being in our 30s. or is it more part and parcel of us, going out on the internet? Have you found more geek connections on the internet?
Well, the very hilarious story that honestly, we became friends, Aaron and I.
Right.
And you, by playing Halo.
That's true. That is true.
I mean, I would say that.
But we went to party. But we went to an active party. We went to a Halo party.
But we would never have spoken again.
True.
You know that.
True.
And yet, we're doing this Monday night thing. Want to play? And I was like, oh, okay. And the rest
is history.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that's remarkable.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. So it is sort of, we are internet friends, aren't we?
We are internet friends. I remember meeting people that I'd only ever met on playing Halo in that group. And like, it was like, oh, here's Low Gray. I don't know people's names. I only know.
Okay, actually, that brings up a good segue. Wait, the bullying that goes on video games.
Well, before we go there, because I think that's a good segment, mm-hmm. but I wanted to just kind of one more thing in the middle here. One of the things that's really interesting that we've talked about you know, a lot of people contact us because of Geeks On, and they basically say to us, you know, I didn't know that there was a group of people like me in the world.
I didn't know I was a geek, too.
I always felt ostracized on the outside. This part of myself, you know, I either had to lock away because it didn't fit into the world around me, or I didn't lock it away, and then I didn't fit into the world around me, you know. And so one great thing about the internet is that it has opened up and helped people find people like themselves.
Sure.
Right, which
for
has been
sure.
great. You know, so, you know, although there's that other side of it,
offers anonymity and the ability to strike out at somebody anytime.
So now we're back to where you were talking about cyberbullying.
Is that, yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, I listen to these people on Halo and on other games that are especially multiplayer online testosterone boy fest. The number of insults and flames and just like stuff that goes on in that room, you know, like for doing a legitimate kill on a guy, you know, suddenly you'll get. I'll get 5 emails about you suck it just goes on and
identity.
On and on.
Again, it comes down to identity. World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
When you would play World of Warcraft, there were people, you know, there was the cyber bullying on World of Warcraft in a weird way, where you would go through a certain realm and someone would be a very high level player, you know, that was 40 levels above you, you know, that you could never take. But they would come over here and they would deliberately walk around and kill all the low level players.
Oh, just, so they could like. They're steal just, your lunch money?
No, they couldn't
virtually.
Actually,
they wouldn't steal your lunch money.
They got nothing from it
other than basically kneeling on your face.
They don't get your treasures.
No,
or
they didn't get
money.
They didn't get treasures. The game was deliberately designed to discourage that level of poaching, so
to speak.
But
they did it anyway.
But they would come and do it just so that they could.
Well, there's a lot of people who do that in Halo, too.
Yeah.
You know, and they do that the move which always cracks me up, which is where they kneel on your face. And that's the thing.
Teabagging.
Yeah. I mean, it's the bullying
move. Ultimate insult.
It's the bullying
move
on Halo.
It's
teabagging someone.
I think it's great that they put that in the game because, you know, there is that.
They didn't put it. It's just crouching and letting go.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's become a thing.
There's no, like, teabag button. But
deploy teabag.
What's fascinating is that, like, you know, geeks are bullied. Geeks bully.
Right.
You know, they just do it in different ways.
Well, it just cracks me up because, like, back in the day, and watch me go back in the day, when I was playing Street Fighter at an arcade, there was still that level of getting pissed off that I had just won the match.
Yeah.
I mean, there was still that level of real gritted teeth testosterone, but because he had to look me in the face and decide whether or not pushing me was a good idea, it stopped there.
Right.
You know, it was like, come on, man, that was cheap. And that was as far as it went.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't continue on for the next hour of just like insult. And there was an email that went around that said they're real people too, and talked about the level at which we talk to people in India or who are doing our phone services and stuff like that, and the level of rage that we put out there to people who we think are anonymous. And and to me, that's still bullying. They're not just a disembodied voice. It's not just a computer.
Here's another form of, it's kind of the same thing, it's kind of not. It's kind of something I think is pretty awful. But there's a trend where people will take pictures of their girlfriend naked when they're with them. When they break up, they get angry and they put these pictures up on the internet.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a really common thing.
That's humiliation,
parents, tell your daughters, do not let anyone ever take a picture of them naked. And parents, do not let anyone take a picture of you naked.
But you know, or, we all have cameras on our cell phones now. It's like,
well, yeah,
it's
we've become a very documented society.
But it's like, you see things all the time. People are uploading stuff all the time. Someone does something, you know, some nerd does something with like a lightsaber.
Oh, yeah.
And that kid was like,
He was traumatized.
He was traumatized. Absolutely traumatized. And, you know, he was a cute little kid just playing with it, you know.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
That's the other thing is that now you can get humiliated and bullied by the world.
You can become a superstar overnight.
Yeah, go on Xbox Live at any time.
Yeah.
And you can be bullied and humiliated.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, like, the Star Wars kid is a perfect example of somebody who is socially awkward and who did something that he thought was cool
and thought he was doing it completely anonymously.
Anonymously and kind of privately.
His mistake was only, you know, not
letting the
erasing
tape out.
Yeah.
The tape.
Yeah. I mean, because we've all been idiots.
We've all been idiots. You know? I'm just glad there's no documentation of every me one in of my us. Wonder Woman costume. When I was little.
Nate Fillion was talking about how, you know, he bought a lightsaber, right? And so he bought it off of eBay, and it's the coolest thing in the world. And so one night, you know, he's having a party, and he looks down the street, and he sees some guy, you know, just got one and playing with it in the yard. So he takes his lightsaber, right, and he hides it, and he's walking down the street, and he starts to pass a guy, and the guy sees him, and the guy's like, oh, he starts acting kind of cool. He's like, sorry, I was just, you know, and Nate goes, it's okay. He just jumps in, and suddenly they're having a lightsaber fight in the yard, you know? It's like,
oh, man, that's awesome.
Awesome.
Having had a lightsaber fight as an adult with other adults, it is still fun.
It's the most awesome. And then, you know, so a kid does it, and now he's humiliated.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it, you know, we do it. We love it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know. You know, I saw I've said this before. I think I've told this story before on Geeks On, but I was down at the farmer's market, you know, sometime about a year ago, and there's this little girl, you know, about 12 years old, and she's talking to her mom, and she's a geek, and she's gushing over something. And her mom turns to her and says, you are so weird. And the little girl goes, Mom, weird is cool now.
Hmm.
And well, I was good just for the little
like,
girl.
I was like, yeah, I was like, you're awesome. So, you know, I guess all I would say, you know, we probably should wrap this up.
Yeah.
You know, but all I would say is, you know, this is a really interesting topic. It's something really interesting to think about. We've all experienced on some level bullying, mm-hmm. even if not directly, we've got a visceral experience. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Come to our website, www.geeksonline.com. Come to our forums and tell us either your experiences or your thoughts. If there's something we missed out in the topic, send us an email to either
Matt, Peter,
Pete,
Don, Aaron, or Lisa at geeksonline.com.
I said Pete, but it's Peter at geeksonline.com. And let us know. And
also, I'd be interested in hearing about if there is, in any way, a positive aspect to bullying, like in some ways that bullying made us stronger. Like, I was just thinking of a very geeky example, which is, I remember my friends and I, this is super geeky, so buckle up. We went to a Renaissance fair, in costume, and afterwards, we owned it, even though we were, you know, and we went out to, like, I don't know, like a place, like an ice cream parlor or something like that, and we hung out in our costumes, and we didn't care, and there was something great about just not caring.
Yeah. I lost my girlfriend at a Renaissance fair. There was a guy who's teaching sword classes, and like that.
Oh, that's pretty hot.
And he said, it said, fence me for a dollar. And so I was, you know, I was on the NYU fencing team for a hot minute. And so I was like, come watch me fence this guy. And he saw my girlfriend at the time. He was like, I'll fence you for your girlfriend. And I was like,
whoa.
And I was like, it's no. On. And she was busy being, you know, sort of, she was like, whatever. And she just rolled her eyes and stood there. And so I put down my $2 and I got 1 point on him, I think. And he proceeded to school me the rest of the 5 points or whatever it was.
Man.
And I mean, he disarmed me once.
Wow.
It was totally like, oh, fuck, I'm fighting D'Artagnan. I was like, oh, I thought I was good at martial arts. This guy's really good. But I mean, and she was like, we walked away and she was like, great, you lost me.
Oh.
I think that would be. That would be the one bright and shining light of bullying is that it, you know, it forces you in the best of circumstances to learn to set boundaries for yourself so that you can define who you are and say, I'm comfortable in this. Right.
Well, and do you also need it to know, you know, do you need that opposition to know how strong you really are? Do you need that opposition to work against, to improve, to even to act as a check against things which are socially weird?
But I think, again, it comes down to where a person's at. Some people can handle that and come out as a better person. Other people just get beaten down and destroyed.
Yep.
And especially when you're young. I mean, I'm sure we remember when you're young, you're super sensitive. Yeah. Like, everything hurts you.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, you know, this is really an interesting thing, which is I think, you know, I got hit. You know, I got beat up once, not because of bullying, just because, I mean, I didn't even know the kids that beat me up. You know, it was just a random attack, you know. I mean, I guess that was bullying. But, you know, I don't remember that. But the things that people said, you know, those things like, are still there.
So, oh, so sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe not entirely true.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway.
Let's leave it there. If you got experiences, let us know on our forums, www.geeksound.com. We got a little bit of a smarty librarian piece that I'm going to post up here, and then we should probably wrap it up. Smarty!
Hello, everybody out in podcast land. I hope you're all doing well. Let's get right to it. I know there are plenty of devotees of the steampunk aesthetic amongst the listening audience. And I get it, I do. In a world where we are more and more enslaved to devices that we have less and less of an understanding over, the idea of getting down and dirty and greasy with gearworks and coal-powered engines is intoxicating. The sensual pleasures of the mechanic are sometimes enough. But sometimes you need more. A good story. So, dear listeners, I bring to you today two wonderful steampunk books that have it all. Wonderfully evocative worlds and rip-roaring adventure yarns that will keep you turning the pages. First up is Leviathan, the first of a trilogy by Scott Westerfeld. Set in Europe, just as World War I is about to break out, Leviathan follows the adventures of two teenagers on opposite sides of the conflict. Austrian Prince Alexander and British airwoman Darren Sharp. He is on the Lamb in a stolen Stormwalker, and she has talked her way on board one of the great British airships. The narrative alternates between their points of view as they start out on their separate journeys and eventually meet. Along the way, we get treated to some first-class world-building. Westerfeld's Europe has a rich political history complicated by a division in technology between the nations. On the one side, they use manufactured fighting equipment, tanks, stormwalkers, guns, cannons. The other side uses biologically engineered animal technology. The Clankers have zeppelins, and the Darwinists use massive floating animals cobbled together from bits of jellyfish and whales. Westerfeld does not skimp on description, and soon you'll be lost among the blueprints of the great flying ships just like I was. Alexander and Darren are both really enjoyable characters, and the story is bright and breezy and filled with exciting battles between the Clankers and the Darwinists. Although technically the book is young adult fiction, I think young adults of all ages will enjoy this one. Set on the other side of the world, 19th century Seattle, Cherry Priest's Bone Shaker is almost the complete opposite of Leviathan, but just as engaging. Where Leviathan soars above the war-ravaged plains of Europe with epic air battles, Bone Shaker crawls around in the muck and rain and mud of Seattle, complete with junkies and zombies. Yes, I said zombies. They totally want to eat your flesh, too. The heroine of Bone Shaker is a tough old broad who shoots first and asks questions later. The steampunk elements are there, but they are firmly in service to the story, which is a real page-turner. The novel starts off with a journalist trying to tease the story out of our heroine, Briar, but she would prefer to leave it buried. But much like the zombies which have taken over downtown Seattle, the story refuses to stay dead, and events send Briar back into the hellhole she thought she had escaped. Sonic guns and airships and so forth are all there, but more vivid is the cast of characters. A motley assortment of pirates, rogues, and scoundrels that skirt the edges of society and are a lot of fun. From the gentleman who stole a Confederate airship to a gun-toting Indian princess. I did not want to leave this world behind. So there you have it. Two great steampunk novels, two great adventure stories, and not a single corset or description of a dress between them. And back to you, boys.
Smarty. Love Smarty. All right. So, shall we?
That's it.
All right, everybody. Thank you for another great episode of Geeks On.
I'll say bye for Don.
Bye.
I'll say bye for Aaron.
Bye.
There we are.
And I'll say bye for me. Bye.
Have a great Geek Week. Rock it out.
Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, talking about the stuff that geeks like to talk about. Kind of fucked it up in there.
It's better than I
would. By geeks for geeks, talking about the stuff that geeks like to talk about. This week is Geeks On Bullying. I don't remember the rest of the stuff, right?
You do. Can we use it verbatim?
Yeah.
Just like that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That'd be awesome.
Maybe I'll just put them on afterward.